Valley with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It's good to be back. It's your weekly podcast. Where else would you be? You still haven't answered those questions, by the way. Where else would you be when you listen to us and everything else? And how do you listen to us, more importantly? A little bit of a domestic debate we had, me and my other half last week, is how people listen to the podcast. Do you listen on your earphones? Do you listen just on your mobile device, as people call it? Because my other half does, and she said the sound wasn't that good. I said, well, most people listen through headphones and listen through the car, listen through the stereo. Anyway, turn it to a domestic. So if the Absolute Rally listeners can help me out, settle this issue, I'd really appreciate it. You weren't expecting to be part of my domestic bliss, was you? There you go. I thought I'd introduce you to it anyway. Bless her. Listen, normally at this point, we'd normally say hello, Jack, and we'd say hello, Ryan. Due to some technical issues, we're only going to say hello to one person, and it's a completely different person than normal. So welcome back to Absolute Rally as a guest host for the first time. Zav McCartan, hello.
Good afternoon. How are you?
How are we? I'm all right. It feels very arse about face, if I can say that, because there's no Jack and there's no Ryan, and both of them, all being well, are going to be with us towards the end of the podcast, certainly. But you're at the top of the podcast, and the reason why you're at the top of the podcast, because I really wanted to talk with somebody who probably cares and is passionate as me, is about Rally Poland. We've got Jack, obviously joining us later on, but I've just been speaking to John Armstrong. She's done a lovely piece with him, who's going to be coming up a little bit later on in the podcast, about the DMAC juniors. But the big story of DMAC, of course, was Tanak, and I'm still got a lump in my throat watching what went on with Tanak. I don't know whether how much of you, how the footage you've seen, but I watched WRC Plus last night just to kind of get myself back up to speed, because we were away at the weekend doing a few things ourselves. So I was watching it kind of remotely, but I watched the reaction of him coming into that controlling. You've done stage end a lot more than me, Zav. Just to see somebody come into a stage end like that and share that emotion, it was heartbreaking, wasn't it?
It was, and I mean, coming through with the lady it held, you know, all those things that go through your head, you know, possibly my first victory, you know, one for DMAC, you know, we're in the Ford after the couple of years we've had, you know, and then for that to be snatched away, it's heartbreaking, you know, it's a word that I have seen, I've heard you use, I've seen it in social media, you know, as you know yourself, absolutely, I have some great followers and friends on Facebook. It was a word that was used all weekend. But that said, while sport can be cruel in many ways, I certainly think that Tanak has the capability and capacity, now that he's a little bit older, to come back stronger from it.
Yeah, I think, you know, Tanak's been around a lot longer than what people realised. Obviously, he was part of the M Sport family, and he was given quite a lengthy contract a while ago, and he drove the Michelin car, which was kind of like a third car to the two factory cars a couple of years back now, and it was a Michelin livery car, and then he got promoted, of course, and was teammates to Elvin, and then both of those drivers, of course, have been moved to one side, I think it's fair to say, because Elvin's got quite a detailed program now with British Rally Championship, of course, WRC2, we'll talk about that as well very, very shortly, and Tanak's kind of been there. He was kept in a wheel car, and I still think there's a lot more to come from that young man, and he has come back. Obviously, you look at what happened, you know, the Titanic story last year, for God's sake, where, you know, he went swimming and he still got out and finished the rally. You know, the mental strength that these guys have, I think, is phenomenal, but I think it shows with somebody like that, you know, and I guess the drivers, and there was quite a touching video that went out as well, of course, with Sebastian Ogier going over to Oit, where I think they'd just gone into Parc Fermé or somewhere like that, and Oit had walked away quite upset, and of course Ogier goes over, gets him on his shoulders, and every driver went over and you know, consoled him, and you know, because, you know, I suppose a win where you're driving the B car, if you like, you know, in the second string team, a win in a second string team would probably more or less guarantee him, you know, something, some kind of program for next year.
It's funny. Sometimes you, myself, some of the guests you would have on, rally fans, rally spectators, we're kind of guilty of forgetting how young some of them are. When you have an amazing talent, that's just unremarkable, like Oit did. I mean, look at Andreas Mikkelsen, for example, who won the event. I mean, I'm not sure exactly now what age Andreas is, but he's got to be mid-20s. But he's almost seen as a veteran. And don't forget, you know, Andreas started when he was 17, went to Ireland, did a lot of stuff, did the British Championship, did he, you know, IRC in the days. We forget how young they are. This is almost the second coming of Oit. And I think sometimes, while you may have a talent that is above the normal man, you still have to grow up and you still have to learn, you still have to mature, you still have to taste defeat, you still have to taste victory. And that little bit of time out that he got and went back to Estonia and did a little bit, I think, with Marco Martin, has stood him in good stead this year. He is more capable and more able not only to withstand the pressures, if you like, of media, but I suppose he's seen in DMACC as a team leader and a direction in which DMACC are pushing not only their brand awareness but also the team. And he's been quite impressive this year. He'll grow from last weekend. And, you know, he's got to go to Finland and take so many positives out of it. We could be in for a really enjoyable finish event.
I think Finland is where certainly DMACC, they've come out this week in MN and you know, David Evans, who always writes an excellent piece, has been talking to Dick Cormack and, you know, they're adamant the tyre that they've developed quite recently, which is a new WRC tyre, which they've developed somewhere else, and that was going to be the tyre for Poland and the tyre for Finland, and certainly they can take great confidence from the fact that Oit was there, and you know, obviously road position did come into it probably very early on, but certainly towards the latter stages he was straight in times, and he was there or thereabouts on merit, not on road position.
Yeah, no, definitely on merit. And I mean, you know, as you said there, the final control, it was just Sebastian Ogier that went over and said, hey guys, come on, you know, he should have won, and showed that camaraderie that does exist. And it was quite ironic that it was Sebastian Ogier. And what I mean by that is, you know, Ogier's victim to me of some kind of maybe unfair press. The guys in the WRC, Tony, you compete yourselves, you know, they're not just mere mortals. They're able to take between 100% and 103% on a stage and reach limits that none of us could ever do. They're all ultra competitive, but, you know, we only ever see them in TV at a stage end sometimes, the way the program is produced. We only ever hear them on the radio at a stage end. And as you said there, you know, I've done stage end radio in the past. It's a captivating 90 seconds, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, where you get a driver doing, you know, in Mexico or Italy or Portugal or Poland, you know, a stage where they've taken 4 or 5 seconds out of their nearest rival. You know, there's elation, there's joy, you know, the sweat's running off, the endorphins are flying. Or conversely, you know, they've picked up a puncture, had to change, dropped a minute after a storm and drive. That is that snapshot where you get raw, raw emotion. And I think sometimes Ogier is guilty of being perceived by the way people see him in that instance. And he's far from that. You know, he is an affable, nice, genuinely, he wants to win, but he knows he's good. It's fitting that it was Ogier that led that, really is.
Yeah, again, we all want to see the human elements, and there's always a story, isn't there? You know, there's always a human story. There's always more than just the competition. You know, sometimes the story of how some of these guys have got there and the backstories and stuff like that. I think sometimes, and I think in the current climate, we think we're open to stuff with social media and all these things and everything else, but truly, it's a very closed shop when it comes to that. And I suppose we only find out the backstories of how some of these guys have got there and you know, the help they've had perhaps from here, there and everywhere, that, you know, maybe further down the line. And in times where we're crying out for kind of personalities to latch on to, as you say, you've just been talking about Sebastian Ogier, you know, he gets such bad press when, you know, I haven't heard, you know, when I've spoke to people that have dealt with him and done stage ends, you know, people like yourself, Julian Porter and things like that, I've only ever really said really, really nice things. You know, Jack's, you know, mentioned him as well, and, you know, he's only had good experiences with him as well. And this is what's missing. Sometimes I don't feel like the personalities are allowed to perhaps come out these days. And that's what people latch on to, isn't it? People want heroes and they want to latch on. And I suppose they want a villain and a hero and everything else, maybe. I don't know. But I think we're almost robbed these days of attaching ourselves to perhaps to some of these drivers, because it's, you know, I suppose they're very private and they're well within their rights to be, of course.
No, I agree, and I mean, any, you know, when you watch TV coverage there, you're in a service park at the end of a time control. The first thing you're going to see with, you know, the manufacturer drivers is, yeah, by all means, they're talking to radio, they're talking to television, they're talking to all the world TV, you know, in Poland, you'll have TV crews from Germany, France, Italy, Denmark, Spain, Holland, etc. But in the background, there'll be somebody from the team in a PR role, and they'll have a little dictaphone going, and they'll be recording every single interview so that anything happens to be misconstrued, it can be, you know, put right or rectified. And a lot of the times, they operate under those, you know, restraints. But they're all human, and all of them are professional. And going back originally, you know, to what we're talking about, and Ozier lifting them on the shoulders, that's, that doesn't surprise me. You know, they're all affable and approachable. And it's like I say to a lot of people, when you're on an event, is if you watch what's going on and you pick your moment right, be you a fan, spectator, you want to ask a quick question as a journalist, if you pick your moment, it's never a problem.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. Now, I want to crack on with Poland stuff, by the way, and you know, we had to doff our cap, really, to the story of Oyt. Obviously, it was Andreas Mikkelsen who won, and Oyt got second, 26 seconds down on him. And a friend of the show, Hayden Padden, again, I wanted to mention Hayden, because I was... A man, you talk about raw emotion. Again, I watched some footage of him, what went on the previous round, of course. And, you know, to see an interview go out where quite clearly he was moved and upset, and there was tears and everything else over the fact he'd gone off previously. Of course, the car had gone on fire. And to see him come back with a mature drive, I think it was one of those ones where he ground out the result. He wasn't he wasn't a million miles off the pace. You know, he was only 28 seconds off a win. But by the same token, I can imagine him just not pushing too hard and just getting himself in a position where, okay, yeah, we've got some good solid points. I can build from here. Confidence, obviously, going into Finland as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, and for Hayden, it would be a chance to regroup. But I mean, for me personally, he's the real deal. You know, huge support back home in New Zealand, and they bring a personal touch. I mean, when they went back to New Zealand, him and John Kennard, the reception they got, people up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. Hayden's the real deal. You know, he has at times this year dragged Hyundai along with him, if that makes sense. We expected big things from Thierry. Now, Thierry has run well the last two or three events, but there was a catch there for Thierry, for it wasn't clicking for him. It just, you know, I think the attitude maybe wasn't right or just didn't. And Hayden has dragged, you know, Hyundai in and up the podium and victories almost single-handedly. Thierry has raised his game, got over his blip, so we now have two. Danny Sorda was consistent, but, you know, he's not setting any world records alight. So it's good. You know, Hayden will grow. He'd probably regroup and thought, right, let's get a points finish. We'll go to Finland on the back of a points finish. And I think for all of the drivers, we go back to that competitive element, you know, 1,000 lakes, 1,000 jumps. there'll be a few egos have to be firmly wedged in place whenever they start the first stage, because it's the one event that they all want to do well on. It's unique. Its character's unique. So yeah, it's shaping up nicely.
And now, again, another friend of the show, he's always very affable, and I guess, you know, the guy, we're lucky enough to get certain drivers, and it's just because long-term friendships, a lot of it, you know, whether I know them, Ryan knows them, Jack knows, whatever it may be, and just some people we can't kind of get hold of, but, you know, the people like Chris Meek and Craig Breen and all these guys, you know, we've kind of got to know over the years as they were growing up as well, and Craig, again, is somebody else which we I suppose we've got to go. Got behind in many ways, but more than most. And obviously there is a backstory. Again, we spoke about backstories before, and Craig very adamant, happy with a solid result, but really feels the need now that he needs to step it up a little.
I think Craig approached the event very well. I think he was determined to finish it, irrespective of where Lefebvre ended up. Now, I know Lefebvre was leading before he had his incident, but I mean, today there's chat from Otto Hebdo that, you know, definitely for 2017, Meek is the name that is going to be in the team. Now, we kind of knew that anyway. So you do wonder if this is a toss-up between Lefebvre and Breen for the other seat next year. Now, we do know we're going to have a satellite team, that possibly kind of thing, if it's a manufacturer one. I think maybe that's what we're watching. And consistency is the key. Craig finished. He finished well. You know, he didn't, I wouldn't say he set the world alight, but he drove very mature, very steady, and he obtained the finish. Lefebvre, on the other hand, you know, he had his little incident, and we've seen footage of him, the car going down the road with the wheel at 90 degrees to the car. So Craig has experience in Finland. He's been there a couple of times before, has made notes there before. It's an event that he would go to feeling comfortable. Now, whether he has an all-out attack or, again, aims for a steady finish, that remains to be seen. But, yeah, Craig was very good this weekend.
Yeah, I think, again, you know, I kind of, it's I suppose there's a common thing where we talk about how Chris Meek hung in there to get, you know, where he is today. And, you know, even by his own admission, there was often times where he thought, you know, that was it. And you know, there was just a little glimmer of light, which he, and I think Craig is kind of being the same. I kind of feel like he's on a rally by rally basis, the way Chris Meek was very much so. And I just hope one way or the other he finds a home somewhere, whether it's with Citroën or wherever it is. Obviously, he's testing the 2017 car as well, and you would like to think that Citroën wouldn't allow somebody that they didn't want hanging around in 2017 in that car.
The only thing that would concern me a tad. If you look at Citroën down the years, it has always been a French driver.
Frenchman, yeah, I agree.
With the FFSA support, you know, Loeb started off in the Saxos and got support from the French Motorsport Federation, the same with Ogier. Lefebvre is getting funding. So that would be the only question mark. I think there would possibly have to be something in there. But hey, there's no reason why you can't have a World Citroën team and another World Abu Dhabi Citroën team, yeah. If that makes sense. You know, these guys, you know, we were talking earlier on there about their ability to get between 98 and 100% on the driver car at maximum attack. Equally, the drive and belief and desire to obtain what they see as a holy grail is exciting sometimes. You know, Chris has had it for years. You know, Craig, they're unflappable when it comes to that. They truly believe it will come. They truly believe it will happen. They work towards that. That's all they think about. They wake up thinking about it. They go to bed thinking about it. And, you know, when you look at it, you've Craig and you've Chris, you've Elfin, you've some of the other British drivers on the world scene that have done unbelievably well. And then don't forget, you know, for me, the big thing in Poland was John Armstrong, Arsene Price, Gus Greensmith. I mean, what kind of sport over in the two islands we've got, you know, England, Scotland, Wales, and North and South Ireland. I mean, we have a lot to be opening the windows and shouting out to the neighbourhood about how good we are.
No, and again, I think we always look, I suppose we're all guilty of it, we always look abroad, don't we? And what I mean is by that, you know, we always assume the next big thing is going to come from Scandinavia. And, you know, we of course, I'm going to come to a story very, very shortly about Timo Sunonen. And, of course, who won WRC2, beat Elfin by a minute 10 seconds, something like that. And, yeah, you know, he was... His manager's come out, Timo Jokke, of course, the man who was behind Juha Kankkunen, who was behind Tommi Mäkinen, and he's already been saying this, that, you know, we're ready for a WRC car. Our preferred destination for 2017 would be Citroën, closely followed by Tommi Mäkinen's Toyota organisation, and then Hyundai, and then possibly M Sport. And what a wonderful world we live in. The fact that you know, this young man, okay, Scandinavian, he's got a manager that is already kind of pimping him out there. But you know, I just hope that some of the team managers also look, I suppose, to these shores as well, slightly parochial, because I know we have downloads all over the world, but we just seem to be producing, as you've just said, some fantastic talent now, some fantastic talent. But speaking of fantastic talent, what we're going to do, we're going to go to a little break now, and what we're going to do. We're going to go over to talk to John Armstrong and let John tell us all about what happened on the DMAC Drive Trophy. And then Zav and I are going to come back with Ryan with a few more bits and pieces and all our any other business.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks. Accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
And welcome back to Absolute Rally. It's good to be back. It's good to have John Armstrong, a man who I've championed probably since I first met him, which would have been, I reckon, around 4 years ago, give or take next month, when he did the BRC challenge with me and massively embarrassed me. And from that point onwards, I've kept an eye on him. And fair to say, you haven't kept embarrassing people ever since, really, John. Congratulations on your win on the DMAC Drive Trophy in Poland.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's good to get a win finally on the international stage, and we tried very hard over the weekend, and we done a really good job with pace notes, so it worked out well.
It was, we were watching the battle, albeit via stage times coming in, but as cliched as it sound, what a lovely battle to have, a little bit unfair, but to have. The Brits and the Irish all fighting the DMAC Drive, and everybody else just seems to be kind of way off the pace compared to you guys, didn't they?
Yeah, it was brilliant. Just for the three Brits to be fighting against each other so close. I mean, on Friday, the stage times are only really separated by 3 seconds at most per stage. So, it was fantastic to see that the British drivers were showing the best pace, and It's really bright for the future from that point of view for me and Oisin and Gus. So it's very positive, and I think it'll be the same throughout the season. They seem to be the quickest in the championship. Obviously, some of the other guys will be quick in certain rallies, but it's always them two that we're looking to see their stage time. So no, we're looking forward to more battles with them, and it's really, really good.
Good man. Now, again, as I said at the top there, John, I first met you 4 years ago, and you were incredibly quick, and even in the little ST when we did the ST Championship together. And ever since then, I've kind of kept saying to people, this guy can go. Trust me. Not just because he spanked me, but trust me, this guy can go. And you haven't quite had that kind of momentum to do a season, have you? This is kind of, I know you did ERC Juniors last year, but it was kind of a bit part package, wasn't it? Whereas this year, you've kind of got a plan.
Yeah. Well, obviously, I've always kind of worked off, just a stretch budget, and I'm not ashamed to say that, but it's just, we've got a fantastic opportunity this year to work with DMAC. I'll have him on the Batman Shootout at the end of last year, so we've got a pretty good package for this season. I'm still working behind the scenes, getting everything sorted for towards the end of the year, but it's all go to plan. So it's a lot more relaxed than what it'd usually be, and it's obviously paying off, because we went to Poland, just me and Noel on our own, and we just focused really hard, made really good pace notes, and just drove to them. So it obviously worked out for us, and just the fact that it was our first time there and we won it, it's good for us, because it makes people notice, as you say, and it's just fantastic, and it's just really, really, really good.
With regards to doing obviously the championship, it's fantastic. It's very much an arrive and drive situation. Are you getting much seat time elsewhere, John? Are you finding ways of getting out in cars elsewhere just to keep yourself sharp and match fit?
Before Portugal, I'd done probably about 100 kilometres of testing, and then I kind of go out and help another fella from here called Aaron Buster, who's doing the British Championship. I can help him with testing and stuff, so I get some miles through that, but before Poland, I didn't really do that much. Obviously, we get a a pre-event test in the package with the DMAC Championship. So it went really well for us too, and I got a lot of compliments from it before the event. So the feeling was definitely very good going into the rally, so it paid off.
I've seen some of your times on Dirt as well. Now, we've worked a little bit with the guys from Codemasters and Dirt, and we've had them on the programme. I've watched some of your in-car, yeah. And that's quite impressive as well. How have you got so good at that as well, mate?
I don't know, probably just playing it too much, but I've always played video games from a very young age, and I suppose that's probably where I got the interest in rallying. But I've always played all the Codemasters games and Richard Burns and stuff, so I've actually found them quite good for developing your driving style and stuff. So it's a very good tool to use if you can use it in that way. But yeah, we can set some pretty good times and stuff on it, but there's always someone to come along and beat me.
No, normally some six-year-old as well. So it's coming out as,
yeah,
so, some
it,
child
yeah.
prodigy will come on and you go, how the hell have they just done that? How the hell? But you've got a proper setup then. I was genuinely going to ask you this. I did ask the question kind of a bit jokingly, but because I find the likes of Dirt and especially Richard Burns, they are very much like simulators. Do you use them to that extent? Do you work with them and kind of use it as part of your preparation?
Yeah, I personally definitely say I do use it for preparing myself for rallies. Especially, Richard Burns was always sort of the game that would have been the most realistic, but the latest Dirt Rally is definitely a step forward into, if not leveling Richard Burns, but maybe being even better. But it's definitely a good tool to use, obviously. Richard Burns might have a bit more front-wheel drive cars and stuff for me to use, so I do play it quite a lot. But it's definitely good, especially for a young driver if they're just trying to get used to pace notes and stuff. If you try a new stage on a game and listen to the pace notes while you're going through it, it can help your concentration. But yeah, no, I definitely do like playing video games and take it fairly seriously.
Man, I know, I've seen the seat and the steering wheel. It's probably worth more than my rally car.
Yeah, that's it.
It's a proper setup,
really,
isn't it? Yeah, it's a proper setup. Yeah, fair play. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
No, you can definitely spend too much money on it, so you can.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you mentioned before, you're working towards budget as well towards the end of the year. Have you got any other plans outside of the DMAC Trophy?
Not at the moment. We're just going to try and finish off this year with, I think the final two rounds will be good for us because we've good pace in tarmac too. I might do something at home, maybe something local, just for a few miles. But as far as future plans, I haven't really too much planned at the moment. I think we'll probably just get this year done and see what we can do for next year. If we get some of the R5 drives, it'd be fantastic. But we'll just have to see. We're in a good position now to get the second round of prizes. So if we have a good rally in Finland, it's definitely possible, but just have to put in the same amount of work. And I think Finland should be like Poland, but it'll be a few more jumps and stuff in it. So yeah, we'll just try and focus and make the most of this year.
Good man, good man. Now, one little thing. We normally have Gus on, and we're going to have Gus on next week. We'll have Gus on for a chat next week. There was a big competition with sunglasses at the weekend. Who won the sunglasses competition?
Yeah. Gus always wins. He's these real fancy, sort of granddad style sunglasses. So I think he always wins.
Brilliant. We'll open with that. Listen, John. Oh, congratulations again for all of us at Absolute Rally. I just wanted to catch up with you in touch base, and genuinely it's been great to see just to see your career progress from when I first met you, and long may that continue, my mate.
Yeah, thank you very much.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. I say, John doesn't do a lot of interviews, but he just comes across as such a nice, genuine lad. As I say, I've known him for a few years, and again, Gus is our man, I know, but I really, really wanted to get John on and have a chat with him and just to find out how he prepared for Poland. And he was very adamant at how much work had gone into his pace notes and everything else. And also, the man is a bit of a wizard on dirt. And of course, we've been quite supportive of dirt since it came out, and obviously our involvement with that and giving away some copies and everything else. But I wanted to come back and I wanted to bring, at this point, Ryan Champion, who had a note from his mum for the top of the show, is back now. And we were just been talking about Timo Sunderland, and we were talking about Timo Jokke.
Yeah.
As his manager, and this is something you know a little bit about Ryan Champion, and welcome, by the way, to this week's podcast.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here as always. Yeah, and I think it's probably not just I'm not just alone in knowing a little bit about Timo Jokke. I mean, he's been a man who for a good few years dominated the sport of rallying without being directly involved, which is quite a clever thing to do, isn't it? But this man has masterminded the career of a whole host of Finnish superstars. He was heavily involved in managing the careers of the likes of Juha Kankkonen, of Timo Mäkinen, Tony Gardemeister, Harry Rovanperä, all these guys, and even Jari-Matti Latvala, who was involved in Jari-Matti's early career as well. So he's been behind some of the biggest names in the sport without maybe being, at the forefront.
You did mention Mikko Hirvonen then, didn't you, as well?
I didn't mention Mikko Hirvonen, no. Add him to the list.
Yeah, he was. And the reason how I know that, because in my very, very early years when I tried to learn how to drive, and I still haven't quite managed it, as Ryan decided to point out to me last week, that if I wanted my Fiesta ST to go quick, I should get him to drive it. You thought I'd forgot about that, didn't you, Ryan?
Anyway, it was a joke.
Oh, no, it's all right, it's fine. I had some tuition off the late, great Pentti Rickola. I'm going back 2001. I went to the left foot braking school, and at that time, Mikko and Jari were there, and I may have regaled this tale before now, and I remember Pentti pointing out, these are the next two big Finns, and Timo Jokke sent them over there. They sent them to Pentti, and Pentti had basically had them driving around that airfield just outside Bicester, doing all kinds of things, driving on punctures and everything else, and ironically, probably a lot of the driving style's been dialed out now. I think Jari had to go away and kind of readjust his driving style to what he learned with Pentti a few years later. But they were very much the next two Finns, and I suppose thereafter, I'm sure he kind of decided to take a step back, didn't he? I think he kind of took
yes,
a step back.
Yeah, he did, I think. I mean, I think he'd been so involved with the careers of a lot of these drivers and helping in terms of funding and acquiring funding. And I think he did take a conscious step back, but he, like you said, he was definitely involved in the young careers of those guys, as was Pentti Rickola, and been a big influence, like I said, on the world of rallying. But unless you're really into the sport, is a lesser known name.
Absolutely. Now, one thing I wanted to talk about is we've done some bits and pieces of headlines, of course. Kirsty of Jack, who did have a note from his mum this week, and he could have been with us, he was with us, and then he wasn't with us, and then he couldn't be with us for this section. So I'm going to do Jack's any other business for him. So we'll come to that a little bit later on anyway. But Jack's wonderful Bible that we call Motorsport News, of course. There's a bit of a story that broke this week, and I'm going to come to Zav in a second on this, because I've got an opinion on it, and I know Zav was involved with the Ancro Championship over here in the UK, which is now sadly no longer with us. Ryan, control tyres, talk to me about control tyres, because I'm a little bit frightened by this story which is broke.
Well, we often end up talking on this programme about the WRC promoter, don't we? And we'd all like to see the championship going forward. We'd all like to see more publicity. As far as I'm concerned, the one area where we don't have any issues at the minute is tyres. So why are we worrying about something that at the minute is quite healthy in the sport? For me, we have a tyre war there currently. We have DMAC who've come in from nowhere and have now created a tyre that is capable of winning a world championship rally, as we've just seen. They haven't quite got there yet, but you know, it's fantastic to see that they've created this tyre. For me, going to a controlled tyre is just something that we don't need to be worrying about at the minute. Whether there's a, you know, whether that it might mean some investment from a tyre company, which, okay, may be good short term, but for example, you know, I saw it come in the British Rally Championship. I've seen it in other championships, and it can definitely add cost to competing because people aren't able to get a tyre deal anymore. So for me, it's something they shouldn't even be worrying about.
No, I agree. Zav, I wanted to bring you in this one because, you know, obviously you're a man who likes the black stuff. And I mean, I don't mean Guinness, I mean tarmac. And you know, you were around the likes of the McKinstrys and stuff like that, who were big supporters of the Ancro Championship, which is one that we lost here. And of course, you know, you've had control tyres over on the Irish as well at times as well. It's not good, is it? As Ryan's just been saying, you know, we all want to go out. I know I went out and got a little bit of a deal this year, which helped me do certainly an extra round of the British Rally Championship. If that would have been a control tyre situation for me, we probably would only have been doing three as opposed to five rounds.
I don't have any commitments to anybody. All I'll say is that I do think sometimes that the WRC promoters really need to turn the light on in the darkened room they're in. If they don't want to do that, certainly open the windows. And if they manage to get out of it, come back to the real world. Competition breeds development. Development leads to, in some cases, safety elements that find their way back down into the normal motoring person. And what I mean by that is that can be somebody that has no interest in motorsport. So I despair sometimes of the promoters. I'm really hoping that this is their version of an April Fool's joke.
Okay. That, you know what, I think we should just chop that bit out and just put that out as the podcast, to be honest with you. I think that's worthy of it.
I despair of them sometimes because, you know, it's about promotion of the sport, it's about bringing the sport to new countries, and yeah, okay, I can see logic in going to China, and I can see something they're trying to do, but it's almost like sometimes, you know, they've had their house blown to pieces, and instead of getting the roof on to keep them dry, they think, well, we'll put on the doors first. You know, there's no logic to sometimes the direction in which they take it. It's a very close shop in that little closeted world of theirs, and
okay,
I wonder.
Let's look at this from a different perspective. Okay, let's put a slightly different spin on it. A story which is obviously, again, I'm afraid of being parochial. We've just been talking about the DMAC Drive Trophy, of course, which we had John on talking about, and he got into a big battle. And the way they've done the prize structure this year, and bear with me, because I'm going to come to Ryan first on this. The way they've done the prize structure, Ocean Price has won two rounds that back-to-back, and that has got him a run in two events, I believe, in an R5 car in WRC. Now, that's a tyre manufacturer, control tyre situation. It's acceptable in a one-week championship, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is, and I think that's where it works very well because that's where you need to limit costs, we've just said about getting tyre deals, but I certainly think in a one-mate championship, it is a way of controlling another element because you want the best driver to come out of those one-mate championships, and that means giving everybody equal equipment, and as well as equal cars, they get equal tyres, and for me, I think that's not only acceptable, I think that's a great way of using one mate tyre supplier. But at the top level, I know Formula One has a single tyre supplier at the minute, but we're not talking Formula One, and for me, I think there'd be, you know, better battles if there wasn't a single tyre supplier. But anyway, as Zav has just said, in WRC at the minute, it's not something we need to be looking at. We've got bigger problems. We need to broaden the horizons of the championship. We need to bring it to more people. We need to get people back interested in this country. Even casual viewers in the UK have lost interest in WRC. That's what we need to get back, not worrying about tyre suppliers.
Okay. All right. We've all done various
totally
things.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
Totally agree.
We've all done certain things in the media, right? I'm going to give you both a magic wand, and I'm going to try and do this in as short a possible period as possible, right, so the podcast doesn't turn into a 15-hour epic. Right, Zav, what would you change?
I would have... I would keep radio as it is. I would have more live streaming of events, if possible. Now, I know there is a cost to that. We are a society now where we want information right now. As a consumer myself, I keep an eye on social media. Therefore, I see all the incidents, the little clips, the spins, the heartbreak and the elation when an event's over. You don't always watch a highlights program, and you certainly don't watch one in 2 weeks' time. With that in mind, the way we are as a society for right now, information now, I would improve, where possible, the exploitation of the sport to reach a wider audience.
Okay, right. Ryan?
Well, I have to agree with Zavin that the people want, they want information now. They want to see what's happening now. So we need to see stuff live from the event. The Circuit of Ireland has shown that it's possible. So we need to embrace new technology in doing that. As we've also talked about in previous weeks, I'd like to see a little bit more character in the events. I'd like to see different formats. It doesn't necessarily add to more cost. I don't think it needs to add to more cost, but let's see some different elements. Yes, I know the darkness has caused problems on dusty rallies, but you know there's times when stages in the dark can really add an element to the rallying, take that interest a little bit further than what we've got now in this office hours profile with the central service park. Come on, let's mix it up a bit. Let's bring some excitement back to the sport.
Okay. I've got an idea.
You don't have to go mad with it. I mean, I appreciate that there's a big stepping stone between Anchor and the World Championship, but, you know, we have an example at home. Rally Sunseeker ran two stages down through the town, promenade on a Friday night. The town was packed. Now, they were only little blasts, but they brought the rally into the town. It started the rally on a Friday night, and it added to the event. And a lot of events have kind of mimicked that, bring it into the town, put on something different. You know, it doesn't have to be massive. I know we have a power stage on a Thursday night, for example, and, you know, we've seen that it does bring the crowds in. But yes, let the events have some character. Let them have a spirit.
Boys, I've got an idea. I've listened to what you both said. I've gave you your magic wands. Right, the answer to everything that you've all said, apart from perhaps the event format, right, but certainly from what you were saying, Zav, and everything else, I'm a big supporter of WRC+. Okay, I like WRC+. And if you've got the decent signal, I've watched live stream stages when I've been having dinner. I've been out in a restaurant and I've watched a live stream stage. Luckily, I've got an understanding partner, but still, that's what I've done. And, you know, it gives you everything in your hand. Now, obviously, you have to subscribe to that. Now, hear me out on this. Everything that you kind of were saying, Zav, albeit more other than, you know, it's limited to the amount of power, you know, to the power stage and one other normally on the Sunday. Now, if we open that up and we found this mythical title sponsor, which we thought we were getting with Red Bull with the promoter, in fairness, and again, we spoke about this the other week, and you look at perhaps, you know, the way Monsters come in and stuck a load of money behind World Rallycross and several of their drivers, you know, I keep saying this, I would be worried for World Rallycross if it didn't have Monster money. But if we found somebody to sponsor the WRC Plus app and made it free and they promoted that fact, would that give more to more fans to what they're all, what I'm trying to get at is, would they lose what they'd lose on the subscriptions, would they gain through, you know, tens of thousands more eyes?
Yes, because if you look as a punter, if you go onto the World Rally Championship website to look for information, it is the most cluttered website I have ever seen. They need to simplify it. You know, in fairness, the ERT website, much simpler, much easier to maneuver. Now, if you're on a phone in the middle of a stage, or you're trying to tune into like radio, or look at some of the streaming or the little video clips that ERC do, you can't do that with the WRC site. Make a separate button to go into WRC Plus and leave it free. There's enough money swilling about the sport to fund the like of that, but make it easy to access. It's not easy to access the WRC.com website.
And, no, it's not, but WRC Plus is. I went to bed last night and put WRC Plus on, and I watched the highlights from Poland. That was that easy.
Yeah, but make all that, simplify it and make it accessible.
Yeah.
So that's the first start. But there needs to be a collated mammoth effort from the promoters to simplify access for people and making people aware of the sport.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about it, World Rallycross has come... Now, I know we've had Rallycross since 1967 at Linton Hill, but World Rallycross has come from somewhere, from nowhere to somewhere, space of what, 5 years?
Yep.
When I sat down with Martin and I and Carlo Sullivan and was involved in the very first season of Rallycross, it was European Rallycross, and their market plan was 5 years to go World Rallycross. They went to World Rallycross inside three.
Yeah, I was there. I was privy to some of that stuff back in the day as well.
Were.
I worked on some
so
of it. Yeah,
it's doable. Now they are promoters.
It's doable with the fact that they got monster money, though. To be fair, Monster money is propped that massively.
I'm not sure how much of it is propped, but at the end of the day, you know, when they started off, they had nothing. You know, Martin and I came in, he had a vision and he got the right people on board. And what it has proved is that if you market it and open it, you know, it will have the following. I mean, how many were in Hollier's last weekend? 55,000 or 60,000.
Yeah, something like that. I haven't paid that much attention.
As an example, it is doable. You know, Ryan was involved in the British Championship, you know, 8-9 years ago in the Mitsubishi's and that. It was promotable. It had a following. We're never going to get back in terms of the British Championship to the 78, 79, 1981, 82, the Vatman, the Mikkel, the Waldegards, you know, and the Blomqvists. But I, you know...
Are we not in the realms, and this is where I wanted to bring Ryan, because Ryan grew up with this, and again, you know, he's grown up with it through family as well. So, you know, his old man and his mum and stuff like that, obviously he competed. You know, you grew up during that period with your family competing, Ryan. Do you see... You've gone through a generation. We're almost the next generation. Well, two generations probably after me and you now. We're 40-ish. But, you know, you think about guys in the 20s that perhaps at the sharp end of BRC, and then you've got the guys in the 30s as well now that perhaps are not quite there or thereabouts. It's changed, hasn't it? There's more choice. People are doing different things now. There's different sports, not just World Rallycross. It's just the attention span of trying to get, you know, just... Joe Average, you know, Joe Public, Joe Average, whatever you want to call them now, to have that attention span. Everything is instant, and I don't believe rallying has that catchment anymore.
But is that because we haven't kept up as a sport in terms of promoting it? And
absolutely,
and I think that's one of the issues, and we've definitely lost the casual fan. Funnily enough, at Goodwood, you know, 10 days ago, I happened to end up in a chance conversation with Martin Brundle, who is a very well-respected presenter now, obviously, for Sky. And he said, I don't know where to see rallying anymore. Where do you watch it? What channel's it on? Here's a guy who did two world championship rallies, who appreciates rallying, knows about rallying. We got talking about Elvin Evans, we got talking about Gwyndaf Evans. He was still interested, but he didn't know where to find it on TV. And quite honestly, does anybody else? You know, it changes every year on year. We need some stability as to which TV channel it's going to be on. And we just need to revolutionise the way in which the rallying is promoted and bring it up to date.
Anyway, listen, boys, again, I said that I didn't want this one to turn into a 15-hour one. We're very much in danger of this. I wanted to do... I've got Jack's Any Other Business, so I've got to do his. So effectively, we've got four sets of Any Other Business, which initially could probably turn into an extra hour of this podcast. Anyway, so I'm going to go to Zav first, because technically he's no longer a guest. He's a guest presenter, so I'll give him the grace of going first on his Any Other Business for this week.
My Any Other Businesses would have been twofold. I'm not sure what time we have. The first is, I was at Lurgan Park last weekend, and I'd love to see something like that here in the UK. Each stage under 2 miles, 8 stages, 16 miles in total, and it was hammer and tongue between Kenny McKinstry and Gary Jennings all day. The beauty of it is the sport to the people in the park. You had 60 crews, so it ran like clockwork. Simon and Willie Flirton and his team at North Armagh Motor Club did a great job. But what it does, you go to events and you might see your wife for 2 days of the weekend. The whole family can come. They had motocross, they had side displays, they had aid stands, It's been televised, they had radio. It's just an amazing, amazing event. And you can park up at 8 o'clock in the morning, lock your car, and no matter where you are, you can see a rally car, even if you're walking to the service area. And something like that over here in the UK, and get local companies in behind it. I mean, the local politicians. Last weekend, I think I seen every politician in Armagh and Down was at the event promoting the local area and that. So, yeah, that's my any other business. We should try. It'd be magic to have something like that over here.
And Gary Jennings won, didn't he?
But he had to leave very quickly because he missed Alistair Fisher and Fiona's wedding on the Saturday to do Lurgan Park. So if Alistair's listening on honeymoon, which you never know, Alistair and Fiona can
go for you. Do you know what? I really hope he's not. And I don't want to lose any listeners. And I've got massive respect for Alistair, but I truly hope he's got other things on his mind. It's his honeymoon. It's acceptable for him to switch off from rallying. But still, there you go.
Just as an aside, I mean, Gary won the event at about 5:20, and somebody tagged him and Kerry in on congratulations, Gary Jennings, 4 in a row at Lurgan Park, and she added a comment, well done, now get your ass to the wedding.
No pressure. So,
no, none at all, none at all.
I, do you know what? I felt quite bad. I was not quite as serious as this, but before, this wasn't going to be my any other business, but I need to mention this because there's certain people who used to listen to us, of course, when we were Total Rally back in the day, and originally producer James Muir, who was one of my best mates, unfortunately, for him, it was his wedding on Sunday. And what I mean is unfortunately for him, because he invited me, and of course I was doing a rally, and there was a massive delay on the rally, which meant I couldn't get back. But at one point, we were contemplating driving to the reception in our race suits and the rally car all the way from Anglesey, just to turn up for his wedding. But unfortunately, there were some delays and we couldn't quite do it. And we had a couple of issues with the car as well. So we had to go sensibly, and we didn't end up getting to the reception on Sunday night. So, James, I know you listen to us, and I know now you're on your honeymoon. If you're listening to this, it would be weird. But congratulations from all of us. And even though you're not really involved in rallying anymore, we'll have to get you back on for a giggle again. But anyway, I digress. Ryan Champion, your any other business, please?
Well, mine. I'm not really sure whether to give the WRC promoter credit on this one. We're not going to go into that debate again. But I'm not a big fan of the World Championship leader running first on the road for 2 days on a gravel rally. I think it seems a bit false. Run first on the road on the first day, then come up with something else, position order, whatever it may be. Having said all that, what an exciting few rallies it's given us by having Sebastien Ogier running first on the road on gravel rallies. We've had Paddon win, we've had Neville win, we've had Mickelson win now when Tanak should have won. Isn't it great to have some variation in a World Rally Championship for once?
It's a fantastic product, which, again, you know, let's not go back down that road, but, you know, we need to be promoting the fact that we've had, you know, so many winners. You look at, I had a very interesting meeting last week in proper world, should we say, and with people who work in Formula One. And, you know, we came to the conclusion that Formula One now, the soap opera is far more interesting outside of what goes on actually on the circuit than what actually goes on the circuit. And I believe that rallying is the complete polar opposite to that. I think there's so much going on the stages. The stuff outside of it is just incidental. You know, the stuff on the stages to a motorsport fan, I just think we just need to lead them there, don't we?
Yeah,
we just need to lead
them. I also think, you know, hopefully this is giving, you know, Tanak's been on the fringes for so long. We've seen pace, but have we ever seen him, you know, put forward a rally-winning performance? Well, not really. But now he's shown he can do it. He's shown himself he can do it. You know, and Neville's got the confidence of winning rallies. But Paddon, we know, is going to win more rallies. Chris Meek, we know, is going to win more rallies. And all of a sudden, we've got not only drivers who've shown they're capable of it, we've seen drivers do it, and, you know, let's hope that all new regs next year, let's hope that there isn't one manufacturer who gets a big march on the rest, because that would spoil it to a degree. But we've had a great battle with great winners and brilliant to see.
Okay, I'm going to do our any other business now. I'm going to do Jack's first. This coming weekend is the next round of the British Rally Championship, and it's got a unique feel to it. Day one is a gravel rally, and day two is a tarmac rally. And day one runs alongside a BTRDA national gravel event here, and BRC crews, myself included, of course, will be doing 8 stages, four stages repeated. There's been a last-minute deal put together between the guys at the MSA and Natural Resources Resource Wales, which is still an ongoing battle, which we'll bring you some further updates on that. And I say my good friend Jamie Edwards, who was sat alongside me at last weekend at a single venue, which I'm going to talk to you about on my end of the business. But it's the Nicky Griss stages. Nicky, massively passionate about trying to turn this rally into something different, and I believe we've got that. It's going to be interesting. We're going to have BRC crews there, we're going to have national boys there, and we're going to obviously the joy of national rallying is you don't have to be homologated, and there will be some homologated cars there, and there'll be people comparing times. But the BRC crews, myself included, we've got a very different agenda. We're going to try and get through 8 stages of gravel in order to save the car for our mechanics, our engineers, our mates, our friends, our wives, our other halves, whatever, to turn it from gravel to tarmac in a window of a couple of hours on the Saturday evening to enable us to go and complete the rally, because it's still the same rally on the Sunday, and it'll be 9 stages rather of tarmac on Epping Ranges, which is an epic place. Is Epping Range, have you ever done anything there, Ryan?
Funnily enough, I've never done a tarmac rally over Epping, but I've done lots of gravel rallies over
yeah,
Epping.
So. I watched the DVD. The stages are quite unique, and they're very tight, very twisty, and everything else. But Jack's Any Other Business was a one to watch, really, on this coming weekend. And is Any Other Business was going to be Ollie Mellors in the Proton Super 2000. Perhaps not one of the more publicised Super 2 cars, because, you know, obviously we had the Fiestas and we had the Skodas and we had the Peugeots and things like that. And it was a very small operation compared to those guys. Ollie, of course, son of Chris. But Ollie has already done a rally up on Epping Ranges, and it went very well. I think he was 6th or 7th overall. And both him and probably someone like Alex Laffey as well, who's only just finding his feet, it's fair to say, on gravel in an R5 car, but he's done a lot of tarmac rally, national tarmac rally, and a lot of the national tarmac stuff seems to be on Epping over here in the UK. So the two guys who are going to be there or thereabouts. But Jack wants to do a one to watch, and it's going to be Ollie Mellors this coming weekend on Epping. Right, my Any Other Business, gentlemen. Twofold. First one, I'm going to talk about a single venue rally. I went to T. Croix, which is a race circuit, and we went there in order to just get the car into tarmac spec for this coming weekend, and just try a couple of different things. And my normal co-driver couldn't do it. It was his 50th birthday, so I put my best mate in, Jamie Edwards, who's been doing this Rally for Wales campaign, which, of course, we've been talking about trying to save the Forest Rally, and as we know it, in Wales, along with a couple of other people. But me and Jay, best mates, I was his best man, fully enough, at his wedding. But the last time we did a single venue rally together was something like 14, 15 years ago, and we had a ball. And I genuinely forgot how much fun it was just to go and do a single venue rally. And I don't think I'll go back there full time, but there's almost a bit of a snobbishness sometimes, I think, between, you know, people who do single venues and people who do multi venues. But I can actually see the sense now, right, in some people. It's such an easier way of comb rallying.
It absolutely is. But I think also some of that is you're rallying for fun. You're doing a one-off rally for fun. As soon as you start doing a championship, and particularly if you're doing something like the British Championship, it all becomes a bit serious. But like you said, single venue rallying, best way into the sport. You can do it cheap and cheerfully, or actually you can go and buy quite a proper car to go and do it with. But some great venues around the country that vary massively in the challenge, and a great way into the sport, and still a great way to enjoy it.
There was some people who took it quite serious, though. Which I'll talk. Go on, mate.
Well, no, the only thing I want to say is, you know, you have stages this weekend. We talk about spectators and cars and how wonderful it is. One thing, for those who have tuned into the podcast, if you get a chance, go to Willowfields about 3 o'clock on Saturday. The cars have to go from gravel trim into tarmac trim. You're going to watch suspension units being changed and potentially differentials. If you want to see the real unsung heroes, the mechanics that work in the wind and the rain on their back, soaking wet, you'll see them face a challenge that you don't normally see in an event. Normally they'll turn up, cars will turn up ready for a gravel rally, do the gravel rally, go home, or they'll turn up for the Ulster or the Southern, whatever it may be, and tarmac trim, that's it. If you go to Willis Wells for that service, 2.5 hours long, you're going to see the mechanics earn their money.
Absolutely. Now, my last Any Other Business, which might link into the promoter, and maybe this, I don't want this to last too long, but I listen to a lot of other podcasts, and I listen to a lot of sports radio and stuff like that. And one thing's for sure, rightly or wrongly, betting, gambling in motorsport, seems to be a non-entity. When you think about football, and you know, you can bet now when the first corner is going to be taken, when the first yellow card, and the same with rugby and tennis, you can bet on pretty much any other sport, but rallying more so. And the reason what made me think of this was I was looking at Hennings' car last night, and Hennings carries the Leo Casino sponsorship, which is very similar to what Frederick Arlen runs over in the British Rally Championship. And I just find it, I find it funny that I'm not a big gambler. In fact, I never really gamble, to be honest with you. I may go the horses once or twice a year, if that. But every other sport is kind of gained off the back of gambling money. I suppose the way back in the day the tobacco money came in, a lot of other sports now have kind of took in, you know, the likes of darts and snooker and all these other sports have kind of took in this, the gambling money, if you like, the betting shops and things like that. And have we missed the trick? Have we missed the trick that rallying could have so many different aspects to placing a bet, stage wins or, you know, sectors and things like that?
It would have to be on a popular radar, though, wouldn't it?
I know, but if it had that type of money put into it, and what I mean is by that, you know, if, you know, said company came in and went, right, we're going to be, you know, your betting partner for WRC across the world, and, you know, all of a sudden it becomes part of their marketing as well.
Yeah, but I'm going to use a very powerful hint. There's a well-known powerful bookmaker who actually at the start of the year was offering odds on the World Championship. Now, I haven't gone back in and checked it, but I've had a couple of flutters. Elfyn Evans, when he finished, was it third and beat Andreas Mikkelsen? Was it last year? Yeah, I mean, I think I had Mikkelsen at 16-1 and had 20 quid each way. So they have dabbled in it. But it's, as you say, it's a right market to have a spread, if you like, of who's going to win a stage or who's going to lead at the end of the day. I'm sure that the promoter has spoken about it, but it depends how much of a cup they want.
It just hit me when I was, I spent quite a bit of time travelling in the car, not time travelling, I'm not Marty McFly, you know what I mean? I spent quite a lot of time just driving around in the car, going to places and stuff like that. So I listen to a lot of talk radio and stuff like that, and I listen to a lot of sports podcasts, and a lot of these sports podcasts, I've got support from kind of, you know, betting apps and things like that. And it just kind of hit me that really it hasn't been embraced in the same way as other sports. And, you know, it was just a thought. That was my any other business anyway this week, gentlemen. It's the end of the podcast. It's gone on probably about 20 minutes longer than what I planned, but invariably we got there in the end. And Jack, as I say, Jack was with us, but due to some technical difficulties, we didn't end up having Jack as part of this podcast. So that's why I did his any other business for him. So, Zav, thank you for being a guest presenter in Twofold this week.
My pleasure. Yeah, I do want to come back on, if it's possible, and talk about Pace Notes and the making of at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
A couple of good stories there.
Yeah, no, we can do that, because, funny enough, we had Seb Marshall on with his unique style that he has with Kevin Abring the other week. So we've got a couple of other features that I want to try and shoehorn in at some point. So, Ryan, you're away. You're James Bond this week. You're away working somewhere secret again, aren't you?
I'm at Rockingham Motor Speedway this week.
You lived a dream, my friend.
With not a nice car in sight, unfortunately. Well, no, I did see one. I said that's not true. There is one. I have seen one there at the circuit.
Yeah, I think that's the one that you kind of go there and you drive. You have an experience driving in it at some point. Yeah, isn't that what
I was going to say? Do we not know a absolute rally presenter?
NASCAR driver, shake and bake, baby. That's what we should have said to him.
Next week's any other business, that should be, what is Jack Benyon's NASCAR nickname?
I love it. Folks, if you're listening, just in case you listen to this before Jack does, just start tweeting him just random names that you think would be applicable for a boy band kind of looking type character. Just do a bit of research, stalk him almost, possibly go on Facebook, look at images, see what kind of inspiration you can get, and just randomly send them names of people that perhaps you would think of NASCAR
and
names.
You mean like Buffalo Banyan?
Buffalo Banyan, oh!
Yeah, I was going to suggest we could set the ball rolling, but I think Zav's already there. So Zav, you start a tweet on that one, and we'll come up with something.
We'll join him. Yeah. He won't know what's hit him. He won't know what's hit him. That's funny, because by the time this podcast drops, you'll listen to it, and then he'll put two and two together. But until then, hashtag NASCAR star.
Hashtag NASCAR star. Yeah, that little cliff of his will quiver quite a bit, you know.
I love it.
Okay, hashtag NASCAR star, Buffalo Bennion.
That's it. Folks, we do appreciate the download. And again, without our supporters at Team Coordinate, who have just gone to Twitter, seek them out. And as I say, they've been very, very helpful to us. And we wouldn't be producing this without them. So we do appreciate Donna and Dane supporting us as ever. But you do know where we live. It's facebook.com/Absolute Rally. And if you don't know where we live on Twitter, that would be very odd, because everything seems to go through Twitter these days. It's Absolute_Rally on Twitter. So hit us up on there. Get involved with there. If you are so inclined, if you are using iTunes to listen to us, and you do download us via iTunes, if you could nip onto iTunes and perhaps leave us a little bit of review, it does help us. A 5-star one would be lovely. And thank you for the download. It's been great, Zav. We will catch you up again soon. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it's been good fun. Thanks, guys.
And right, same time, same place, wherever you will be next week.
I think I may even be at home. There is a chance.
Hey, I look forward to it. Folks, thanks for the download. We'll catch you with you next week.